Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Lady A. There was a bit of a problem with calling in. I hope everybody can hear me. This is Lady A, and this is a team of voices. Tonight we're having a show, and first I should say that the team of voices is part of allpoetry.com, the largest poetry group in the world. And we are having tonight, my co-host Sky Darkholm and I will be having a show. It's called The Mysteries of History. And so we're going to talk about art tonight and their artists, some portraits, famous paintings that were done. And I would like to firstly say thank you very much to Deborah Lee, who is our creator and coordinator of our shows, this Team of Voices, And she's the backbone behind all of what we do every night on Blog Talk Radio, a team of voices. And so I welcome you all tonight, and I'm a little bit late because of what happened, but I'm going to answer the phone and welcome some people in. I see 440 is already in the room. Is that you, Sky?
Hi, this is Stephen.
Oh, hi, Stephen.
Hello.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I'm just putting your name in the little spot there. Nice that you called in. Thank you for calling in. And then I'm going to pick up another call. Hello. Welcome to the mystery of history. And who might I ask is calling here? 603.
That's me, Andrea.
I should answer. Oh, hello. I should have. Yes, I'm very sorry. I'm not sure what was going on earlier, but I did get in, and I apologize, but I actually was talking to Deb for a little while and just hung up from her when I did try to call in. So are we ready for the mystery of history? And this is a new part of the show, a new show to stir some interest in the history of the world in any shape or form, and tonight we're having to do some art. And now Sky Darkholm, who is our brilliant poetess, would you like to say anything about the show starting tonight with the art? Do you have something you want to say to open up?
How are you tonight? How are you, Stephen?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I know. I just want to, Lydia said it's new, and just to give you a little heads up, you know, it's, like she said, a new show, The Mysteries of History, and it will feature art, music, literature, spotlight tributes, and other platforms and media as a gateway to the past, where we can travel through decades and visit hidden cities, events, forgotten names, and more. And tonight, Lady A kind of told you what we're going to do tonight. And I just want to let you a little bit know the opening music was Franz Liszt, and I hope you loved it. It was Love Dream, and it's in the public domain. Mm-hmm. So, I get a little bit of a surprise for you also, Andrea. I've got a Lady of Shalott in the studio, and we can listen to it at your leisure. So a little bit of a surprise there for you. Yeah.
Thank you. So now, Stephen, are you in a hurry?
Unfortunately, I am.
Okay. So did you want me to put your piece in the room? Or, Sky, are you able to
yep,
do that?
Yep, I can help you. I can help you with the studio and links. And you can just focus on being a beautiful voice.
thank you so much. Great. So, Stephen, it's your turn to read to us.
Amen. I wrote to the painting American Gothic. That painting is always, every time I see it, I look at it a while, and I just the emotion, or maybe the lack of emotion in it, has always been kind of a interest of mine. So that's kind of what I was trying to push out with my words, and I call this Depression Realism.
Excellent.
Pitchfork preachings of plainness. Serious seers through spectacles, secondhand suit coat over denim overalls, straight-lipped, leveled look. Wainscot siding warrants weather in. Plenary pain proffers no insulation. Frosted glance at upper vertebrae, revelation comes out to roost. Tablecloth dress of plainness over Sunday's best collared blouse, follicles tied tightly at stern, forming face to fixed frown. Idioms passed between the two, counted on one hand per day. When sanguine spans are thwart and through, there isn't much left to say. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I like this. I like your interpretation of it, because it says it just as you see this. And what I really liked, because this picture, the first thing I notice in the picture is her face. Looking at him,
yes.
And he's, yes, it's really, And you did that really well. And the alliteration throughout this whole piece is excellent, because almost every line has alliteration in it, and I love alliteration. And so here you have the description of her tablecloth dress of plainness over colored blouse. Then here we go. Follicles tied tightly at stern, forming face to fix frown. Excellent alliteration. Love it. But her description, I thought, was really perfect. And I'm going to focus on his face when you look at it. And I might add that the painting that you are speaking about is, for the listeners that can't see it, is American Gothic, the picture of the husband and the farm husband and wife with the pitchfork, which is a very famous picture. And I thought you did a terrific for the whole thing. But he's standing there, and you can almost read his mind. She's burning holes in his neck, and he's like, oh, like you can almost hear him say, I'm so stuck in here. Can someone save me? That's what I get from looking at his, look at his eyes, you know. But she's very stern, almost disgusted looking at him. Excellent, excellent job that you did on that. What do you think, Sky?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Am I on mute? I am not. Okay. I actually the faces are so very clear. Actually, that's one of the first things I noticed too, is the and the palette of color also. There's a lot of beige in this. I really like the palette of color, which almost kind of mirrors that look that she's giving, that beige washed over look. Like, what's going on? And I love the way that you pieced it together. So even for the readers who cannot see the picture as it is right now, your descriptions of it are so giving to it, down to the pitchfork piercing plainness. And it does look, the picture, like, I think it's because of the white, the beige wash over. I'm not sure what it is, but it is, or it's just two people standing in front of a house, but there is like this a bit of a plainness, but in a beautiful kind of way, in a very giving kind of way, and detailed. Sometimes things can seem so plain that you really, the details of it stand out so vividly and intricately that the three images here perhaps are really focused in on, which gives it more detail because of the simplicity of it. And I kind of get that in that first line. And of course you bring in all the details with the denim overalls and the straight lip lavelled look. And I love that you put that detail and you put that language to the art. And then again, the wainscoting siding, Warrant's weather, talking about the house and bringing in all the aspects of the picture. Whereas again, people that are listening can kind of just listen to your poem, close your eyes, and they really see the image. But you don't miss out on the emotion of the image either, and that last stanza with the idioms passed between two. So after you're done describing the picture itself, then you get into the meat of it and the emotion of it and what's going on perhaps between the two minds, and I think it's quite brilliant.
Thank you, Sky.
Now, I was just reading some of your comments too that some people have put in there, and they talked about the Great Depression. And that it's, you know, that the suffering of the people during that time, I thought the comments were really good too with regarding you capturing that important time in our world. And because, you know, it was, you know, there was no security blanket, there was no social services or welfare, or there was nowhere people could go. They just had to make do with what they had and struggle deeply for it. So I thought you did a terrific job on this. Well done, and I'm really thankful that you wrote to it as well.
Thank you. I'm thankful for the prompt too, because like I said, I've seen this picture, of course, it's a famous painting, and I've always been intrigued by it, so to finally actually get to write something to it, it was really cool.
Oh, great. That's great. It's I find it's fun to delve into you know, a different type of a prompt too, and I like that. You know, we can all learn something. I learn something all the time when I write to unusual prompts or different prompts, and it's a lot of fun. I think I'm really impressed with your writing though. I thought you did a really, really good job on this. Very good. So just before you run away, though, let me just say that I would like to talk about the artist for a minute. I'm just going to read about the artist who did this painting, if that's okay with you, before you go. And I can get back to the page. Here we go. Okay. So this is, again, called American Gothic. And it's painted by Grant Wood in 1930. And so it was painted in 1930 when U.S. artists were inspired to paint realist scenes of rural America during the Depression, rejecting European modernist influences for a decidedly homegrown, often folksy authenticity in a style that became known as regionism. It would help if I could read, wouldn't it? Regionalism. Sorry, everybody. And so this February, the painting will travel outside North America for the first time as the centerpiece of the Royal Academy of London's exhibition, America After the Fall, the painting in 1930s, where it will be shown alongside both regionalist and modernist works. And so this was also to the striking couple are identified either as a homesteading farmer's wife or as a daughter with her tacky and overprotective father. Wood's sister Nan, who posed for the picture, always insisted the two were father and daughter. Wow. Perhaps finding the age gap too unseemly, the relationship has always remained interestingly ambivalent. Isn't that? I've never heard that. That's kind of a shockeroo when you think about that, because I don't think she looks like a daughter at all. But interesting how that was taken that way. So there's a little bit of history on the artist. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I just say, yeah, I thought that too when I was reading that that some people interpret her as a daughter. So I actually kind of tried to put that in the right as well, kind of letting the reader go either way with that. I tried anyway.
Yeah. Well, I thought you did a great job, and I'm happy to put these different paintings up to discuss as well, because I think art takes so many forms, and we're all tied together. In those forms, one is influenced by another, and so on and so on. So, thank you so much. Are you going to hang for a little bit, or are you going to?
Yeah, I can hang for one poem before I have to hit the road.
Okay, I'm just going to
check
the
stories behind them as well, Lady A. And
yes.
Just knowing if someone comes in, I promise I will let you know.
Okay.
I just so that you know, I got two sound clips in the studio for poems, and I didn't know if you wanted to let Stephen, before we go on to another poem, plug any of the shows that he has coming up.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, tonight at 10, we have a show, Poetic Inklings of Tomorrow, and we have spring paintings from Thomas Kincaid as the prompts to write to. So how about that? We got art, too, tonight.
Okay. Great. Thomas Kincaid is a very prolific artist and has a lot of wonderful paintings of the seasons and families,
yeah.
And the topics are numerous that he paints, and I'm sure everybody, like Christmas cards, everybody can see Thomas Kincaid everywhere at Christmas time, so that should be interesting for sure. Great.
Does have such beautiful work.
Yeah.
Well, you can pick where we go. I've got a SoundCloud for Gerald Green. I've got a SoundCloud for Phil the Poet, and
we
do
have that.
Okay. All right. So I'll put Gerald Green down. And he's such a great SoundCloud. And, I've just seen Phil the Poet giving out SoundClouds recently, which is so exciting
to be
able to hear it. Go ahead, what?
Wow.
I said, yeah, he just started doing that, I think, last week. It was quite a surprise.
Yeah, I just love it, too. Yeah.
And he has such a beautiful, like, accent, and everybody has different, such beautiful accents. It's really, and I think that hearing a poet read it themselves is always, that's always better. I mean, you could hear, you could hear it in their voice, how it's meant to be read. I think it's just so excellent. Tell me when you're ready, and I will press play there, Lady A.
Yes, go right ahead. And, perfect.
And he wrote to Whistler's mother, so, you know, and so.
Oh, great.
Do you want to talk about it after or before? You know, I'll press play.
Well, we can okay, hang on a second. Let's have a little blurb about the artist who painted Whistler's mother. And it was James Abbott McNeil Whistler. And this painting was done, everybody knows what Whistler's mother's painting looks like. It was done in 1871. And one of the most peculiar artists of the late 19th century, James Abbott McNeil Whistler, proposed a more sentimental and subtle painting, which was similar to the Romanticist movement. Yet conceptually, it was much different and more progressive. The artist was stubborn enough to pursue an artistic career and build quite a personal style. One of his later paintings best reflects all of those efforts, and it's called The Arrangement in Gray and Black, number one, but it is much better known as Whistler's Mother. This artwork was made in 1871 while the artist was living in London, and the main protagonist of the same is, you will guess, the artist's mother, Anna McNeil Whistler. It was done in traditional oil on canvas manner and displayed in a special frame designed by Whistler himself. The painting was purchased by the French state in 1891, and since then it is shown and held at the Musée d'Orsay in Paris. Wow. Yeah.
I really love this one. I love the tones of it. I love those darker tone paintings. I really, really love the tones in this one. I love the story of the Lady of Shalit, but I loved the tones of this picture. I thought it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I went with that open music, because it's in the Romanticism period, and I was like, what music is from the Romanticism age? So, but all right, here's Cheryl Green for you.
Carpe Diem, written in red by Gerald Green.
Uh-oh.
Seize the day, she said in hurried tones, as if I didn't want to carpe diem. I wasn't sure how to respond to the call to cherish moments or how to use them.
Oh, you're right. Uh-oh. I apologize, Lady A. Here's the right one. Sorry. I know what I'm doing, I swear.
Whistler's Mother, written in red by Gerald Green. She sat on the chair in her Sunday best in the drafty New England house on a hill, allowing her son to waste her time preventing what must needs be done. Each day she rises with rooster's call, rekindling fire in kitchen's stove, preparing food for her extended family who labored with textiles machinery. In generosity, he did not paint the dust, the ever-present fruit of cotton's loom, invading every crack in space and floating through New England's valley air. Her calloused hands cling to embroidered handkerchief and rest upon her lap as if she were in church or at a private funeral in someone's living room where death accompanies congested lungs. A sitting profile was his chosen view to hide a frailty and accentuate her flowing dress and stately look with feet upon a warming stool. The furniture was simple, carpet thin but clean, most items either gray or black, displaying frugal puritanic taste, in parlor seldom seen. An unattractive simple scene, she muses, that no one would desire or even could admire. End poem.
This is excellent, and Gerald has a great way to describe things in a simplistic form, where, you know, you look at it and you can be, it's his way of doing it. It's very visual at the same time. You can see, you can almost smell the cotton dust that's floating around. You certainly can smell the air, that there perhaps is a fire in the room to keep her warm. But I loved the touch of the puritanical time that this lady lived in. But she could be mourning too, but the Puritans, you know, they did not, you know, stray from black and gray and white. There was no color in their way of living. It was considered too appealing to the wrong type of person. So to be in black, dressed in black, is kind of, and wearing the little caps, is like honoring, almost like you're a nun as a woman, and that you had no real emotion, almost, I felt. But I think he did a great job in describing this painting and imagining what her life was like. And I thought he did a very, you know, very good job. And I really liked the verse where calloused hands cling to an embroidered handkerchief and rest upon her lap as if she were in church or at a private funeral in someone's living room, where death accompanies congested lungs. I really thought that was a terrific verse, and it provided a great visual effect on this poem. And Steve, what did you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with everything you just said. I always like the way Gerald writes and reads as well. I told him in my comment that he gave this lady a perfect personality to her look. I really like how he brought us deep into the art by describing such small details that the naked eye wouldn't actually see, you know, using his imagination for that. And also describing her life that went on around her son, wasting her time, making her sit there, of course. And also, by the way he ended it, apparently she thought that he was wasting his time as well. So, yeah, I thought this was awesome.
Yeah. Good point. And Sky, what did you think?
I thought it was excellent. You know, this one's close to home to me because obviously it was in the open in the drafty New England house on a hill. And I visited, we have the Shaker Village down here in Canterbury, and we have over in Portsmouth, we have all the original homes from like early settlers that are, it's like an entire community, a couple blocks, completely untouched.
Wow.
Houses for the most part, and you can go through and give tours, and they show you how things were done back in the old days, because they have still all the equipment. Like it's all very it's like kind of like a bunch of museums, but old houses that are not obviously upkept, but not really switched or changed. And you can go through, and they do tours, and they do all these things, and so you can
like
really get an idea.
How life was.
Yeah, yeah. And they do reenactments there too, and it's really cool. So I really have a sense of the vintage New England houses and originality of it, because I think it's something that New Hampshire, I think in my area, they kind of cultivate that, and they have those types of communities where you can go in and you can learn and that history. And we have so many older houses here. I mean, I work, it's a 1700s old farmhouse that's still mostly, it's almost, I think they redid the windows and the floors, and I think, and we just did the refloors. It's still the original wallpaper. It's still, I mean, it's pretty kind of weird going in. But anyway, so I love that he brings that in, because I love that kind of history and that kind of, I love doing that. I love going to those old houses. And, you know, when I went to England, that was the first thing I wanted to do. I'm like, oh, let's do some house tours. Because I love that kind of thing. So I love how he grasped that of this painting, that feeling. And then preventing what needs must be done. Because I think, too, in that type of era, it was, you know, it was a different community. A lot of these, it reminds me of like when, everybody pitches in and does a lot of the work around the house. And before, they used to have a lot of houses, like, I mean, a lot of rooms in the houses, because you had to do so much, like, whether it be farmhouses or things like that, bringing in the coal from the, there was so much more that you actually had to do to run a house. There was less, like, easy conveniences, so I like that he brings that in. And I really have to say my favorite stanza was actually the one that you picked. I really, really loved that stanza. I thought it was such a vivid way to bring out the picture of this kind of somber emotion, but I don't want to say somber, but, you know, when you see older pictures like this, you might see someone in a chair reading a book, and it's just a different type of feel, an error without... And now I love electronics because we've gone so far, and I'm not a hater of electronics, but there is a different feel when you see those old pictures, and there's nothing really distracting. It's just very, this is the way it is. And
worked so hard in those days. Like, they didn't have modern conveniences. I mean, a modern convenience would be running cold water in the kitchen. And, you know, they worked so hard, women and men too, working out to make a living if they were farmers especially. But the women, I mean, they had to wash clothes by hand. Their food was, you know, bread was made every day, and on it goes. And the kids, like, it just was amazing how hard, and they aged so quickly because they worked so hard. And I thought that was kind of depicted in here, but, you know, she was probably sitting there thinking, oh, I got to put the bread in, and I got to get the kids, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a really tough, because we don't think of those things, and you see that this particular woman was an elderly woman, because it was the artist's mother, but she had stuff that she had to get done. And she didn't know about carpe diem in that time, you know. And
funny enough, I was reading a little bit about this picture, and funny enough, it was said in some of the material that I was reading was that the original person who was supposed to pose didn't show up, and that the original concept was supposed to be the original person was supposed to stand up, and he wanted the standing up pose, but they didn't show up, so his mother had to step in and pose for him instead, but she couldn't bear the length of being standing for that long, so he had her sit. So, like, imagine how different it might be if that painting was done within its intention. If one person just showed up instead of not, we would have had something completely different, you know, and it may have not been so popular. Like, it's interesting how little things like that happen and change, you know, the art world or, you know, things like that. So,
and you wouldn't think that a simplistic picture like that too would be so famous and so coveted, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a beauty of it.
And Stephen's dropped because he's got his show coming on. Thanks for stopping by, Stephen, and for writing. I really appreciate it, and I hope you have a great show tonight. And it was excellent. Your poem was excellent. I think it was. It's really interesting to delve into this world of art, and I think you can visual. I'm a visual person anyway, so art is, to me, I find it interesting to see the picture and to imagine, and to have the poets give voice to those pictures and artists. I think is a really excellent thing to do. I'm having a good time with this already. And I saw the message on the board with regard to earlier tonight, and that's fine. That's perfectly fine. I just didn't know.
I think we could talk about it later.
Okay.
But and whenever you want to read if you want to play the Lady of Shalott, let me know. It's an 8-minute clip, but it's beautiful. So whenever you're ready for that.
We could do that now even if you want. That would be great. And,
all right. I hope you like it. I listened to it. I loved it. I love the story. I do have to apologize to you. I have a lot going on with work right now. I know we haven't talked the last couple, but I have got, and I didn't write, you know, a new one, but I did bring the one I wrote from the girl with the pearl earring. I love that one. I hope that's okay for you.
Absolutely.
If I were to write, it would have been either to the Whistler's mother, which I think I still may give you an IOU. I think I am going to write to that. I think it's such a brilliant picture. And or the Lady of Shalott, because I just really love the story. It would, you know. Do you want me to play it? Do you want to talk about it? Or do you just want me to play it?
I was just going to say that I remember having to do... In English literature in high school, doing The Lady of Shalott. And I loved it back then, too, which was like only about 5 or 6 years ago. But it was a beautiful poem then, in the story of The Lady of Shalott. And the one that you have on the tape is by whom?
What do you mean, by whom?
Well, is it a poem that you said you had, the poem of Lady of Shalott? Did you have the original
poem
that you...
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought we'd enjoy it together.
I'm just going to look something... let me see. I want to maybe... should we talk about The Lady of Shalott?
Whatever you want to do, darling. I'm just here to hang out with you.
Thank you. The poem, Lady of Shalott, was by, Alfred Lord Tennyson, of course. And I loved it. And the picture that we have in here, I love that picture, too. I'm just going to do a little blurb on... Actually, I have it on the line here too. But I really love this poem because it's so beautiful. And so to have the poem, the original poem of The Lady of Shalott, and the original painting together on the show, I think is excellent. And let me give you just a synopsis of the. Hang on a second. Of the story of The Lady of Shalott. It was inspired by, and it's a lyrical ballad, which is, I found really interesting. So it sings, the meter is quite, the cadence is beautiful. But it was a text by Donna de Scalata. And it tells the tragic story of Elaine of Astolat, a young noblewoman stranded in a tower up the river from Camelot. One of the poet's best-known works is vivid medieval romanticism and enigmatic symbolism inspired by many painters, especially the pre-Raphaelites and their followers. There are other poems by Sir Lancelot and Queen Guinevere and Sir Galahad. So this is a very sort of fantasy kind of, I don't want to say fairy tale, but it's just sort of a romantic version of their imagination. And there also, what was interesting, that there was... let me see, how do we do this now? There were two versions of the poem of Sir Lancelot, and one published in 1833 of 20 stanzas and the other one in 1842 of 19 stanzas. And because it had to be designed to match Victorian morals regarding gender norms and the act of suicide. So it's a very... okay, I've said enough. You have
you get why I love it, because it's so based in fantasy fiction. you hit the nail on the head. You're like, oh, well, it's a fantasy. It has King Arthur and Sir Lancelot. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. And it's a darker tale. And so I was like, ha, ha, I love this. And so, I mean, you know me, so you know why I would have written to this one. Or I really did love the palette of Whistler's Mother. I loved the somber tone. I really did. And but it would have been this one if not that one. And I'm sure you know why.
Yeah.
But here we go. Buckle
okay.
in, because we're in here for 8 minutes on this one.
Well,
but it's good though. Yeah, it's good.
We put a link to the poem. From
the Lady of Shalott. On either side the river lie long fields of barley and of rye that clothe the wold and meet the sky. And through the field the road runs by to many-towered Camelot. And up and down the people go, gazing where the lilies blow, round an island there below, the island of Shalott. Willows whiten, aspens quiver, little breezes dusk and shiver. Through the wave that runs forever by the island in the river, flowing down to Camelot. Four grey walls and four grey towers overlook a space of flowers, and the silent isle embowers the Lady of Shalott. By the margin, willow-veiled, slide the heavy barges trailed by slow horses, and unhailed the shallop flitteth silken-sailed, skimming down to Camelot. But who hath seen her wave her hand, or at the casement seen her stand, or is she known in all the land, the Lady of Shalott? Only reapers reaping early, in among the bearded barley, hear a song that echoes cheerly from the river winding clearly down to towered Camelot. And by the moon the reaper weary, piling sheaves in uplands airy, listening whispers, 'tis the fairy, Lady of Shalott. There she weaves by night and day, a magic web with colours gay. She has heard a whisper say, a curse is on her if she stay to look down to Camelot. She knows not what the curse may be, and so she weaveth steadily, and little other care hath she, the Lady of Shalott. And moving through a mirror clear that hangs before her all the year, shadows of the world appear. There she sees the highway near, winding down to Camelot. There the river eddy whirls, and there the surly village churls, and the red cloaks of market girls pass onward from Shalott. Sometimes a troop of damsels glad, an abbot on an ambling pad. Sometimes a curly shepherd lad, or long-haired page in crimson clad, goes by to towered Camelot. And sometimes through the mirror blue the knights come riding two and two. She hath no loyal knight and true, the Lady of Shalott. But in her web she still delights to weave the mirror's magic sights, for often through the silent nights a funeral with plumes and lights and music went to Camelot. Or when the moon was overhead came two young lovers lately wed. I am half sick of shadows, said the Lady of Shalott. A bow shot from her bower eaves, he rode between the barley sheaves. The sun came dazzling through the leaves, and flamed upon the brazen greaves of bold Sir Lancelot. A red cross knight forever kneeled to a lady in his shield that sparkled on the yellow field beside remote Shalott. The gemmy bridle glittered free, like to some branch of stars we see hung in the golden galaxy. The bridle bells rang merrily as he rode down to Camelot, and from his blazoned baldric slung a mighty silver bugle hung. And as he rode his armor rung beside remote Shalott. All in the blue unclouded weather, thick jeweled shone the saddle leather. The helmet and the helmet feather burned like one burning flame together as he rode down to Camelot. As often through the purple night, below the starry clusters bright, some bearded meteor trailing light moves over still Shalott. His broad, clear brow in sunlight glowed. On burnished hooves his warhorse trode. From underneath his helmet flowed his coal-black curls as on he rode, as he rode down to Camelot. From the bank and from the river he flashed into the crystal mirror, tirra-lirra by the river, sang Sir Lancelot. She left the web, she left the loom, she made three paces through the room. She saw the water lily bloom, she saw the helmet and the plume, she looked down to Camelot. Out flew the web and floated wide, the mirror cracked from side to side. The curses come upon me, cried the Lady of Shalott. In the stormy east wind straining, the pale yellow woods were waning, the broad stream in his banks complaining, heavily the low sky raining over towered Camelot. Down she came and found a boat beneath a willow left afloat, and round about the prow she wrote, the Lady of Shalott. And down the river's dim expanse, like some bold seer in a trance, seeking all his own mischance, with a glassy countenance, did she look to Camelot. And at the closing of the day, she loosed the chain, and down she lay. The broad stream bore her far away, the Lady of Shalott. Lying robed in snowy white, that loosely flew to left and right, the leaves upon her falling light, through the noises of the night, she floated down to Camelot. And as the boat head wound along the willowy hills and fields among, they heard her singing her last song, the Lady of Shalott. Heard a carol, mournful, holy, chanted loudly, chanted lowly, till her blood was frozen slowly, and her eyes were darkened wholly, turned to towered Camelot. For ere she reached upon the tide, the first house by the waterside, singing in her song, she died, the Lady of Shalott. Under tower and balcony, by garden wall and gallery, a gleaming shape she floated by, dead pale between the houses high, silent into Camelot. As upon the wharfs they came, knight and burgher, lord and dame, and round the prow they read her name, the Lady of Shalott. Who is this, and what is here? And in the lighted palace near died the sound of royal cheer, and they crossed themselves for fear, all the knights at Camelot. But Lancelot mused a little space. He said, she has a lovely face. God in his mercy lend her grace, the Lady of Shalott.
So absolutely beautiful. I just am thrilled that you put this in here. I think it's really important that people know the poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson. And this is so very beautiful and enunciated, read so well, and the cadence and the rhyme throughout. And you know what's really interesting too about this piece, when we talk about construction of the poem, is that, you know, there weren't any metaphors in here. You had, you know, your A rhyme, and then you have, you know, B line, and then B, B, B. You know what I mean? Like, there was nothing, the devices that were used, that could be used or not used. It was just a beautiful, beautiful story told in this wonderful fashion of Tennyson, and so gorgeously read. And it can't be gorgeously read unless it's a gorgeous poem. And I just thought that it was so beautiful. And I actually had chills as she read it, and I read along. And I think this was, and always wishing and wanting to go down to Camelot. And, of course, Sir Lancelot plays a huge role in this. And her passing on, and you have this verse where he looks at her, Lancelot looks at her and says that she's she has a lovely face. God in his mercy lend her grace, the Lady of Shalott. And, the romantic in me couldn't help but wonder, had she not died, maybe Lancelot would not have gone with Guinevere after all. But I loved it. I'm hopeless, aren't I? I really love this poem, and thanks for loading it up for us to hear. And give me some of your own opinion on this piece, Skye.
Oh, I just love it. And, as I stem from being, I loved, like, the macabre and the Grimm's fairy tales. I tend to like those darker tones. I don't know if it's because I read Grimm's Brother very young, so or my personality or what. That's why one of the reasons why I love a lot of artwork that has darker tones. And artists that even in like Tim Burton, he has a very unique taste, a darker taste, and this poem mixes so beautiful, like you say, the romanticism, but also the beautiful storytelling and the fiction of it that seems not like fiction, that seems like reality, that legend feel, rather with the, when you're talking about, Camelot, you're talking about those beautiful legends among men, and then you're mixing in again those darker tones, this beautiful story of this mirror cracking and this tragic tale of woe. And of course, you could go back to why people love William Shakespeare so much, and Hamlet, and all those things, and all those beautiful stories that, yes, have those darker undertones, but just really take the breath right out of your lungs. And this is one of those that I think is so beautiful, and it feels like it's 8 minutes in length when you read it, but you're so engaged with the storytelling. And like you said, it is stripped from the sky is this and that and this is that. It simply is, and it simply is telling a story. And because of that, the way that it's told with such care and such beauty, it does carry so, so wonderfully without necessarily putting all those bells and whistles every which way and every nook and cranny, but in its own way, it does. And I do agree with that. When you talk about the sun came dazzling through the leaves and flamed upon the brazen greaves, and bold Sir Lancelot, the Red Cross Knight, forever kneeled to Lady in his shield. It is like one of the ultimate fairy tales. It tells a story, and I am very much based in that kind of fiction naturally. This is something I truly loved that you brought this one tonight. It was such a great idea to highlight it, and I was so happy I found it. A sound clip, I was able to load it up from YouTube, and I was like, oh, this is going to be good. And, of course, the person reading it was just brilliant, and it's such a wonderful thing to highlight. Absolutely. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I find myself getting lost in that. I remember feeling like that when I was in high school, too. We would read poems, and everybody would groan and moan about the poetry. They didn't like doing poetry. But I even back then, I loved diving into it to see what it was all about, to see what the poet was trying to say. And Lady of Shalott was a big one. I think I wrote a paper on it or something. I can't quite remember, but I got chills listening to her read that. And for those of you that are listening, and you can draw, you know, Google Tennyson's Lady of Shalott and read it again in the quiet of your own mind, and just look at the gentle beauty of it all, and the enormous emotion. You know, when you think about her dying, that's a topic unto itself. Like, you know, why did she die? Like, why did she find her life was hopeless? And was there no hope for her to have her knight in shining armor? And of course, that brings up all kinds of other stuff about women waiting for their knights in shining armor. But I think that this poem is an important one in our history, and Tennyson. I love Tennyson anyway. But there you have it, and it's very exciting. And I thank you for bringing that SoundCloud to us. And I do see that we have Deborah Lee on tonight. Hi, Deb.
Hello.
She's just called in, and did you happen to hear the Lady of Shalott that Sky brought on for SoundCloud?
No, I didn't. I was trying to finish up the poems for the show tonight.
Well, welcome aboard.
Hi, Sky.
Did you want to put your poem? Did you want to do yours? You're in a bit of a rush.
Sure. Okay. And I also sent you an inbox, Lady A.
Okay. Sky, did you say something?
Oh, I said
she put mine up for me.
Okay, I see that now. I got your message. Thank you.
You see my...
So let's...
Do you see the poem? Are you on it, hon?
I think Sky put it in the room already.
Oh, yeah. No, she did. I was just wondering if you clicked on it yet. Like, are you ready? Should I go?
Yes. Yes. Sorry.
Okay. The photo I chose was called The Sleeping Gypsy, and I was pretty intrigued by it, so I just told a little mini story. It's called The Lion Creeps Tonight Under Starlight. Here we go. Neath the blackberry-tinted skyline canopy, neon stars light the sky by an opal moon. The woman tossed into darkness by society lay sleeping in the sand on the amber dune. She clings to the walking stick in her hand as the giant Lion King sniffs at her shoulder, and his son stares as he hunts on the land outside his jungle den by the big boulder. Lifting two eyelids, I spot the big dad cat. Now the gypsy dwells with them. Picture that. End poem.
I like the very creative way of writing to that picture, that painting. May I read your, like, this blurb, or did you want to read the blurb about the artist?
Oh, go ahead. It's just what you had put in there.
Okay. I'm going to go back to... So, first of all, tell us what you thought about this poem. I thought it was really great because you think, you know, here this person is sleeping and the lion's coming up, and you think that perhaps something horrible is going to happen, and yet, you know, they become compatible and in the end live together and in harmony. And in some sense, it's like a metaphor for life as it is now, that we have all of these differences, and why can't we, as the human race, live in harmony? And that's what I get out of this poem, and I quite liked it. And Sky, what did you think?
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Well, first, I got to make a little funny, you know, of course, I got to go on a little humor, but all I'm, you know, when you start, I'm like, ooh, you know, the lion creeps.
Me too.
And then I'm just like, I'm over here for like a split second before you started reading, just a little bit of a wimbo way.
Absolutely.
But then it got serious, and I see where you got the, because you know there's the silhouette figure, and in all seriousness, no, I have to agree. The inner messages and tones in this, I thought, was just a wonderful play on it, because in a way you're simply writing what you see, but of course that's not just what you're doing. You're going a little bit deep, and I love that. You know, the woman tossed into darkness by society lay sleeping in the sand on the amber dune, and you could see within the backdrop of that picture that there's a sense of solitude. And I think bringing in the idea of those who are casted out and who endure any type of solitude, first of all, you're sending that right out there. Again, the opal moon, absolutely brilliant. And then clinging to the walking stick in her hands, the giant lion king sniffs at her shoulder. So you're describing the picture for all those people that that are at home listening. You could read your poem and you could really get an idea. Again, with the jungle den by the big boulder, now we're picturing the rocks lifting two eyelids, spot the big dead cat, now the gypsy dwells with them. Picture that. And to me, that speaks a little bit about getting back to nature. And, you know, I'm a big fan of, literature like Tarzan and George the Jungle, you know, and getting back to nature, and even when I think perhaps saying a little bit about, you know, society sometimes can be a little rough, but there, nature, we can find our solitude and our selves again, I guess you would say. And I would agree with that. I mean, that's why often of us, we have companions that are animals, or we go out for walks in nature, and we just get a calm and a sense in there. And even when we do feel alone, when we do feel have that solitude, like you were speaking in the beginning, we can find that companionship in other ways around us if we just kind of look around. And I kind of like that positive, I wouldn't say I kind of like, but I do like that positive message that you have there. And you do it in such a way where you're describing the picture, but there's all those little hints of, and ideas of a deeper type of message there. So brilliantly done. Yep.
Thank you, Sky. Yeah, it would have been easy to just make him eat her for dinner and go in a different direction. but the picture's it's beautiful and simplistic, and she's calm, and he looks lonely, and she looks lonely, and it just, like you said, sort of a Tarzan vibe. It just seemed to fit, and I went that way instead. Didn't want to tear her limb from limb.
Yeah. And Sweet Pea just called in. Hi, Sweet.
Hi. How are you guys tonight?
Great.
Hi.
How are you? Good.
Hello, Sweet.
Hello, hello.
Did you happen to hear Deb's poem?
I did not. I just called in.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I'm glad you called in. I'm just going to give a little blurb on the artist. She had picked The Sleeping Gypsy, which was created in 1897 by Henri Rousseau. And Rousseau and his Parisian contemporaries were fascinated by wandering gypsies, the Romani people known in France as Bohemians, men and women exiled to the fringes of society during a dramatic change mid-19th century, and the French writers and artists had historically linked the Romani to Egypt as well as Bohemia, which may explain Rousseau's depiction of the dark-skinned woman sleeping calmly. Despite the large lion sniffing at her shoulder in an arid landscape, with its flat plains and pure colors, simple geometric forms, dreamlike atmosphere, an exotic subject, the sleeping gypsy at once conjures a desire for the pre-industrial past and asserts its status as a new kind of modern art. And the details of the lion's unnerving eye and the figure's zipper-like teeth is evidence the artist's singular pictorial imagination. And Rousseau, a toll collector for the city of Paris, thus known also as La Duanière was largely self-taught. Although he had grand ambition to entering l'Académie Française, it was denied official acceptance he craved. He later became a hero, although somewhat unwittingly, to the early 20th century avant-garde painters who claimed him as one of their own. So he became famous in his own right and he took a different route to get there, which is also a nice message for humanity, is that we think we have the plan and to get where we're going, and oftentimes it is not the same road traveled to get to that same place. So that was a really great lesson in his artwork. So, Deb, thank you for writing for the show and for giving it the twist on it that you did with at least the one, like, the harmony of people all getting along. And isn't it interesting too, is that with that feeling and knowing Henri Rousseau was kind of a gypsy himself, you know. The picture itself, the piece of art, just gives you that carefree, change the world attitude. Because bohemian, I mean, it's still in style. And, you know, people like. I'm very much a bohemian fan, and I think that this picture does it justice, and you did it justice with your right. So thank you very much. So are you going to hang out, Deb, or are you in a hurry? Oh, you got to go to a different venue, right?
Not till later, but I can't stay though.
Okay.
Do you wanna plug shows before you go, Deb? Sorry,
the next one is Sweet, and she's here, so I will let her do it. And I need to go. Love and respect.
Okay,
you guys.
Dear. Thank you for calling
night.
In and sharing your piece. Thanks a lot. Good night.
Good night. Night.
So, yeah, she's gone. So, Sweetie, I'm so happy
yes.
you called in. I haven't seen you. I was going to call you the other day. Actually, today too, I was going to call you. And I thought, well, I knew that you were going through some stuff. So I didn't want to bug you. But maybe you've been to Paris and back by the since I've taught you last. I don't know. How have you been?
I've been to Texas. I've been to Pennsylvania. My son is doing much better. He's had COVID, but he's on the brighter side of things. I've been in meetings back and forth, putting the dog season together. But we should have the whole calendar done and put together by the end of this week, and I should be back into my real love of poetry. And it's just been insane the last.
But you're well, though, yourself?
I'm doing very well. Just been crazy, crazy. More about my son than anything. But,
yeah.
Things are on the upswing there. Yeah.
How awful is that?
It was pretty bad.
Was he hospitalized too, or would you rather not chat about it?
No, he was not. Thank goodness. He was not.
Wow.
Sweet was really busy sending me lots of fish pictures.
Yes, I did send you fish pictures.
And frogs and puppies.
Oh, I'm going to answer the phone because we have a caller. And... Hello, and welcome to the Mystery of History. And who am I speaking with? I'm going to guess. 512, is this Frank? Okay.
Of course, my dear. Would you not recognize my voice?
Good noches. What's that?
Oh, there's only one. That's me, of course. No.
Yes,
how's
no,
everyone?
Really,
I'm hoping everyone is having a good night.
We're having a great discussion on art and the painters, the artists, and interpreting the paintings thereof.
My siesta, so if my voice is a bit down, it's because I just woke up from the siesta. I apologize for that.
Oh, well, you're fired then, okay? So,
so lady, you didn't, Sweet has a half an hour. I did, if Sweet has time for my poem. I was a little selfish and I dropped mine, if that's all right.
Yes.
Hi, Frank. And I'm not sure how much time Frank has, but we do end at 10. So, you know, Sweet, that's almost the whole rest of the show. So you get to, it's pretty awesome anyway.
No, I can stay on until the, what do you have, an hour, right?
Yeah.
I
probably could stay the whole hour. I'll try. Definitely tell you, call me if I have to run. But I believe I can stay.
Okay. So right now what we're going to do, and welcome aboard everybody. I'm so glad that you called in, Frank, and Sweet. I'm so happy to hear from you as well. And so we're going to do Sky's poem, and then we're going to do Sweet Pea's poem. I don't have yours on my list, but I'm assuming that you brung something.
I haven't. She put it on the main list, and I have the link already to go to put up.
All right. So let's go to Sky's piece. And you have written about the Lady of Shalott.
Well, no, I cheated, remember? Because I said I apologize because I've been kind of a little overwhelmed with things here. But this is it's an art piece that you picked out for one of your older shows. So it is a piece of artwork, and I know it's one of your favorite. And I know that you've read it, but sometimes I get a little delete crazy, and I'm trying to help myself and not do that anymore. So it's reposted. I thought I would read it for you tonight. Because you love this picture, and I thought it kind of fit the artwork theme in which the genres and that we're doing and the errors. So it is and of course it's from the girl with the pearl earring, which I know is one of your favorites. And it is If I Were Not a Jewel Hidden in Chess by Sky Dark. She said I was a pearl, but kept me locked away. Shame gathered on the edges of bedside tables and scuffed mahogany. And the scuffed mahogany, she turned to each eve to pull the beaded metal chain of lamplight. It felt as if she only came to life in darkness, smiling within the curve of cradling palms and dimpled lumber spines as lips sipped sweet sweat from bat. Like vintage bowls of wine. But when first light danced on curtain folds, she placed me back within a box of trinkets, among letters licked with love's promise, the dried primrose of a sterling necklace. And I, the pearl placed against her breast in brief calms of starlight and moon dance, wept as music box closed within her chest. Hidden in the corners that gathered regret and poem. I should have read that I was a little. I haven't read it in so long. I kind of
read that last
put her in there at the beginning. Read the last one. And I, the pearl that placed against her breast, in brief calms of starlight and moon dance, wept as music box closed within her chest. Hidden in the corners that gathered regret.
I love that. I love that so much. And I think that your interpretation of the girl with the pearl earring is perfect. And that painting was actually done by Johann Vermeer. And he was back in 1632. He was born in 1632 and died 1675. So that is a very, very, very old painting. And I love what you've done with this. Now, let me see. Sweet Pea, are you able to give us a comment on Sky's piece?
Yes. First off, I love that painting. I love the movie, too. But outside of that, I love the painting. The poem is actually beautiful. I love the metaphors that you have in it. But when first light danced on curtain folds, and I was the pearl, but kept locked away. Shame gathered on the edges of my bedside table. The imagery is also just beautiful. Among letters licked with love's promise. That killed me. Among letters licked with love's promise. That's a beautiful line. And also, you know, starlight and moon dance wept as music box closed within her chest. It's beautiful. I love the descriptions. And I think, you know, if I was looking at that picture not knowing any of the history, I think I would felt the sadness and that look in her eyes just by your words. I think it's stunning, Sky, just absolutely beautiful.
Thank you, sweet.
Lovely. And Frank, what about you?
No, I mean, I have to echo the same sentiments here. This is, Sky, this was just a, you know, what I wrote down was, I wrote down it was a wondrous interpretation of the prompt, and the rhyming was impeccable. The metaphors are exquisite and romantic, and I just thought this was a very beautiful piece here. Obviously, the prompt is there and it's visible, but there's something beyond these words here that have meaning, attachment, and depth. And when a writer or a poet is, or a poet, active poet is in this case, expresses this type of poetry, it can only have a grander, more of beauty because the emotions here are genuine. They are authentic. And this is what makes this type of poetry even more grand because it is something so beautiful, like that, that it's contained within the essence of the poetess in this case. Did an excellent job here. Commend you on this poem, Sky.
Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome.
Comment. Now we have to do Sweet's piece. Let me get it. Are you getting it? No.
I have the picture up. I have the picture and the link up already. You know, which really awesome. Everybody wrote to different pictures, so you really can highlight all of them. I think that's so awesome. She wrote to the Jean Horner Fragonard. I'm not saying that right. Lady A, help me out. She wrote to the swing.
If you don't mind, before you start, I'm going to just give the little blurb on the artist, which is Jean-Honor Fragonard. I think I'm saying correctly. It's called The Swing in 1767. I love this picture. Love, love, love it. And this picture was commissioned by the notorious French libertine Baron de Saint-Julien as a portrait of his mistress. The swing was to be painted to the following specificity. I should like you to paint Madame seated on a swing being pushed by a bishop. While this odd request was turned down by other painters such as Doyen, a painter of more serious historical subjects, Fragonard leapt to the occasion, producing what became the most iconic work of the French Rococo. In the foreground, the playboy baron himself is depicted reclining on the lush shrubbery, one arm outstretched toward the maiden's skirts, as his other arm holding his balance. He gave very specific instructions to Fragonard, stating, place me in the position where I can observe the legs of that charming girl. His mistress flies through the air on a Sylvan swing, a lovely young lady giving herself away to frivolous abandon, her shoe flying off in the heat of the moment. Goodness. And so that is the story of the swing. And so with saying that, Sweet.
Yes.
All right. Lovely.
This is called Trapped in Canvas. Cradled in nature's bed of grass, I can lie and listen to the river flow, hear the notes and the songs birds sing. Blasphemy caresses my skin as I watch her face smile. Her laughter erupts into lines of poetry as she swings. Legs stretched and head back, she defies gravity. I falter to her power of mystery, a seductress of magic. Grips the guts of my masculinity, I withhold nothing to her trickery. Under her spell of witchery, or in the meadow, daydreaming. Aligned to the sun, she shines like diamonds. Her hair flows behind like weeping willow vines. A vision so divine, men commit acts of self-crime. She possesses me, the girl in the sky. The girl so fair blazes a fire on my skin. And in the voice of my father, I cast my spell. I trap her in canvas, her colors so fair. The seductress is mine. We are forever lovers in my meadow, giggling, a masterpiece of art and poem.
Oh, and a masterpiece of a poem. This was beautiful. I love your interpretation of this, and I love your blasphemy caresses my skin as I watch her face smile. And I falter to her power of mystery, a seductress of magic. You really have a description of this painting done in such a wonderful way. You describe her beautifully, even to her personality. She knew what she was doing on that swing with him waiting and watching her on the swing. And I've trapped her in canvas, her colors so fair. I love that, too. What a beautiful, beautiful piece you've written here with regard
to
this painting. It was wonderful. Skye, what did you think?
Oh, I'm in love with Sweet. She whisked me away with her darkness and her beautiful, beautiful, you know, she's an eclectic writer. So a lot of people, you know, they're like, oh, I love your darkness. And then you have pieces like this of romanticism that are equally wonderful. And I just love when I see such diversity in a poet. And she does it so well. You know, I see this picture, and the first thing, I don't know why, but the first thing I think about is The Secret Garden. And I loved that book when I was younger. I still have like this little, my friend got me this little pocket. It's like a little pocket book. Not a pocket book, but it's so small, and you can kind of just shove it in your pocket almost, and it's of The Secret Garden. And when I first saw this picture, there was such a beautiful secret sense of beauty in it. And I think that you also capture that in your poem. And for me, phrases like, where was it with hair, when you were talking about the willow of the hair, I was so impressed. Here we go. The aligns to the sun, she shines like diamonds. And then this is a line that really got me. Her hair flows behind like weeping willow vines. Oh my gosh. Like, look at that behind vines, inner line, slant rhyme. Wow, that was a lot that I just said, but it just flows so beautifully. And then also the metaphor of the weeping willow vines for tresses of hair. I just think it is so beautiful. It's poetry. It's poetry. And then again, her laughter erupts into lines of poetry as she swings. The idea of happiness and laughter. First of all, laughter is such a wonderful thing of the soul, but to the idea of it erupting into lines of poetry, wow, like that's, as she swings, it is just so impressive. Poetry, I guess I would say. I loved the idea. I love the idea of changing laughter into lines of poetry. I think it's quite brilliant. And when you piece all these little tiny nuances together, you have such a beautiful piece, and I really, and then again, you even brought in the canvas, trapped in her canvas, her colors so fair. And there is like a beautiful bouquet of floweringness that I think, I think you did a splendid job, truly. I'm just rambling now because I'm like, that's so good. But
thank you.
Very, very beautiful.
And Frank, give us your feelings on this lovely piece, beautiful piece.
I'll try to remark the comments there. Sky's comments were excellent there. So I'll give it a start here. This piece here, it just conjured many images here. There was a personification of seduction here, of course, but there was something much more beyond that. It's like when you get a painting, a canvas, I mean, actually a canvas, and the painter looks at the canvas and doesn't know what he's going to do, but when he's inspired, he creates such an abstract sense of beauty. And this is what Sweet was able to do. This poem here was imbued with exquisite metaphors and also a romantic narrative that exuded a delicate beauty. In the way that she describes here, her lines here, the metaphors here, the painting itself was, I agree with what Sky said, it was very beautiful there. There is an element of beauty that when we actually find it and discover it through our work, our craft, we are just amazed with just how much powerful it is and its effects in its entirety. And I think Sweet did an excellent job here. I think this is one of your best pieces here that I would say that really is, I would say, a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
I agree 100%. Yeah, it's a beautiful piece. So do you think you can hang out for a little bit, Sweet, or are you going to take off?
No, I'm going to hang out for a little bit.
Okay, good. Okay, so we have next on the list of things to do, just going through here. Let's do Frank's piece. That would make a lot of sense. Let's do that. And again, he's done on the Lady of Shalott, and I can't wait to hear what he's done.
All right. This is a piece here that I know it's been 4 years I wrote this piece, and it was when I used to write serious poetry. What I mean by that, I had a sense of a meter, a sense of a rhyming scheme. So this is just an example of what I used to write back then. It's called The Tale of Shalott, and of course it's inspired by The Lady of Shalott by Tennyson's poem, and it goes like this. The tenderest clouds of the castle's gloom shall stay with the ominous dirge and loom, as the mournful winds have sung her doom by the bosom of the dim river once abloom, along the castle of Shalott. Somber are the willows and the hyacinths, languishing in the numinous labyrinth. Beyond the wearisome verge of the plinth, the remorse of the Lady of Shalott. To the charming Lady of Shalott men adore, behind the queer-looking glass she forswore, and Sir Lancelot sought her beauty herefore, amidst the autumn's waft gusting ashore. The woe of Shalott, unmistakable winds of dubiety and rue, appearing before drear spectres that imbue her desolate walls of an unbitten hue, the Lady of Shalott. Wherefore has she vanished within the river of a daunting wold with old form and sliver, when those sprightly swans shall shiver before restless forks of trees that quiver? Oh, the treasured mystery of Shalott, whence the echoes of joy shall resound, and the alacrity of the daffodilies profound, by an infinite dirge of water lilies around, the Lady of Shalott. Hark, the gentle whispers of her voice nearby, how the seraphim team within rejoice her reply, staring at the balcony of the tower whereby wrought shepherds of Elysian fields comply. The faithful men of Shalott. Hymns of her praise shall be heard for thought beyond the chamber of her condemnation aloft, that those horns of flowers shall be anew soft, the Lady of Shalott. The shuttle seen with the flutters of the wings, of winsome fairies swift with the springs, beyond the gardens of lost sapphire rings, singing her paean before the cadent kings. The vicissitude of Shalott. Dawn hath now arrived, with a joyous glee, a mirth and gaiety of a soul eagerly free, to frolic in the hummocks beyond the lee, a lady of Shalott. The dark earl of a despair and isolation, with an abeyance of a grievous damnation, to uplift her hope of an imminent salvation, with reapers, rhapsodies, and jovial elation, the hymns of praise, anon of Shalott. August knights of Camelot, men of modesty, shall all bow in obeisance before her majesty, till they are swooned by her immortal vanity, the lady of Shalott. A malediction shall be gone in placid euphony of doughty knights of phantoms of eulogy, who drown the trickful words of her monody and devotion of a virginal gleam, writing agony. A vaunt the curse of a lady of Shalott. Pallid is a silhouette of her glum sorrow, if the breathtaking wish of a fresh morrow, and gone shall be a vestige of her furrow, the lady of Shalott. Behold, of the silly castle of Shalott standing tall, I've been by the hill of the isles, seen by the wall, the splendor of her image beyond a hall, to revive the emerald green of a bitter gall. Tis the tale of Shalott. Fear a daring spirit of a lady of Shalott anew, from yonder bracing wind of Camelot and blue, on to the wistful fall of a haunting drooping dew. The lady of Shalott, in the pool.
You've done an epic job of this for sure. I think that you know, it's like the rewrite of the original piece, and I really loved what you did with it. And you have a great description of what's going on in her mind and in her life. And I love that you, 'tis the charming lady of Shalott men adore, behind the queer-looking glass she forswore, and Sir Lancelot sought her beauty herefore, amidst the autumn waft gusting ashore, the woe of Shalott. You know, I like what you've done with this and it seems like when the original poem, Lancelot really wasn't aware of her existence, and you have brought him in early into your piece, and he sought her beauty when he did see her right from the beginning, and I like that part of it too, that romantic part. It's very romantic, and I think it was also sad too, because you know of her shadow seen with the flutter of wings of winsome fairies swift with their springs beyond the gardens of lost sapphire rings. I really loved this, and you've kept to the honesty of Tennyson's rhyme too, of A, and then B, and then C, C, C. I thought you did a really good job of it. What did you think? Sweet?
Well, first off, I thought it was romantic, but I also thought it was very thought-provoking and a wonderful portrayal, not just of Tennyson, but of, you know, how you use language and how you brought forth the feeling of her and Lancelot. But I think Tennyson's is a little more kind of, I don't know, more forthright, where yours is more innuendo and more of a conversation back and forth, and you have that perfect rhyme, but you have, you know, that curiosity and that... And it could just be the way you read it, Frank, but that, I don't know, that allure to it. And I love some of the imagery that you put through it. And some of that, I'm trying to find my favorite line in here, and it's kind of up to the front, unmistakable winds and her desolate walls of unbidden you. Where's the other one? Of mirth and gaiety of soul eagerly free to frolic in the hummocks beyond the lee. I mean, there's just so many great lines in here, and I thought they were just beautiful. But you bring forth that kind of character of her, and I thought it was just absolutely stunning. Great job.
No, I appreciate that. If I can say one quick thing, I actually, when, so this is all because before the COVID thing, but when I do actually do performances, live performances, I usually do this poem along with the original one of Tennyson for an audience.
I can see why.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much, sweet. I appreciate that.
Great comments. And Skye, tell us what you think as well, please.
Oh, I think it's brilliant. One thing that I'm a big fan of, and you can see it in some of the shows that I run and some of the things that I do, is I wouldn't consider it calling it the same thing, but would be like fan fiction. So I love when, and I give out prompts of like, you know, tell me your perspective on this book. Tell me this perspective on this movie. Tell me your perspective on this character. Tell me the story, but in your words. And one of those things I love to do, you could see it in all my contests. You could see it in my prompts for my own shows. And you can view, so one can see the idea that I love when I can feel the reinvention of something very beloved as almost like an homage and paying tribute, and also reinventing the material and your own perspective. And I think when you do that, yes, there is still that inspiration of the original work, but there is also how you personally interpret it, how it projects your emotions, how it projects you, inspires your storytelling, and it is in a different perspective. You know, and most 98% of the time, sometimes people go stick to the original chair, but most of the time people reinvent it in a different kind of way, with a slight change of pace, and it's those small changes that I love to see, because when you love a piece of work, and there's no furthering it, there's no part two, you know. But when someone's able to, you know, rewrite, because it's not rewriting, but write from their perspective and write how what they gain from the poem, and to be able to reinterpret that in their own language and in their own minds and in their own scenes, what you're getting is more of what you love, but in a different kind of way, and I really enjoy that. So I thought, and you didn't just pay homage to the key elements of the story, and leaping, in my opinion, beyond it and going into more detail, in my opinion, and giving a little bit extra, but you paid homage, as I forget who it was who said, but following along with the a rhyme scheme and with the structure of the piece. Again, those long line end rhymes, but also this vintage and this old English and language that just makes it so elegant. My favorite part, I mean, there was a lot here. It was like you could pick something in every stanza, but my favorite part was where you write, wherefore hath she vanished within the river of daunting wold, the old thorn and sliver, where whose springly swans shall shiver before restless boughs of trees that quiver. Oh, the dreaded mystery of Shalott. Of course, you read that so much better than I did. But that section there, it really, to me, the sorrow and the beauty and the darkness behind the original piece, you have recaptured and reinvented and created it your own. And the implementation of questions for me, that I older poetry does that. They give that, like, you know, oh, the dread or the daunting when you say such words as wherefore hath she vanished. And that gives such a fine quality to work that I really enjoy. And the additive question, it gives that air of mystery and that air of bringing in the reader. And I think you did such a stunning job with your version and your tale of this and your interpretation of it and all that, the highlighting the original work and bringing in something new and inventive. Brilliant. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I have to say that Tennyson did inspire me. The piece did inspire me. I'm a big admirer of Tennyson. And so this was just a pleasure for me just to redo, well, not, as you say, not redo, but be inspired by his piece. And it was just, when I finished this, although it's been several years, I was amazed with what I wrote there. And the comments that I've had, not only here, but off air from performances as well, have always given me a refreshing outlook of what one can do when we are inspired by old poets no longer living, those we admire and still do.
Yeah, that's excellent. I think, and you capture that every time in all of your poetry, you capture that flavor of old world excellence, I think. And
I appreciate that, Lady. One day I'll recite it to you in person.
I'm sorry?
I said one day I'll recite it to you in person.
Oh, that would be lovely. That would be very lovely. So Sky, where are we in the scheme of things? I think we have a couple.
We've got one poem, one sound left. You have not read a piece, so I don't know if you're planning to read a piece. And we've got one more section, one more piece of artwork that Phil the Poet wrote about Lady Shalott. So, you know, if we're talking Lady Shalott right now. And then, you know, before we close out, if you want to just give a little bit of information on the last piece, no one wrote to that, but I mean, if you wanted to, it's up there. And
Klimt is
I have a little
blurb on that. Yes, and I love this painting, and I love the story behind it. And may I just read about this? I'm not going to be able to read mine right now, but I will wait till everybody's done, and if there's time, I'll read mine. But this was, Klimt was heavily influenced by Egyptian art, and this is the portrait of the wife of industrialist Ferdinand Bloch Bauer. He actually commissioned Klimt to paint his wall twice, and it was made at the height of his career, and prompted the critics to coin the phrase. Now, this is German, so I'm not sure if I'm going to say it right at all. Mehr Blech bin Block, meaning the pun meaning more brass, i.e., money, than Block. So, who was the husband? And the portrait is notable for the mix of naturalism in the painting of the face and the hands and the ornamental decoration used for her dress. And the chair in the background. And he has another painting called Judith and the head of Holofernes, the way in which the decoration cuts across the shoulders and forearms creates an impression of mutilation. And what was interesting about this, too, is that she was the subject for both of these works, was one of Klimt's mistresses. So it's difficult not to look at a psychological reason for the disjointing of the head and the body. And so she, Adele, possesses the rare distinction as the only person Klimt ever painted twice. And so then it was acquired... and that was done in 2006. That painting was acquired for a gallery in New York. Now, since then, Oprah had acquired it, and she sold it for $150 million or $250 million. I forget now which, but so this painting. So this is a beautiful painting, and if you look at Klimt's other work, I really love how he painted. And so I'm just going to a small, short brevity, but I'll do it after everybody's finished. But the history of this artist is very interesting too. So let's play Phil the Poet's piece. Is that the last one that we have to do?
That is the last one, and then yep, we have yours, and then. I didn't know if you wanted to, Frank, I know if you wanted to talk about, before we play Phil, International Cafe, and I think Sweet still
okay,
needs to talk about her, I think Sweet needs to talk about her show too, if you want to, you know, before
all
we
right,
that last one.
I'll be very brief here, I don't want to take more of the time. I seem like a record player here, there. From what I understand, it's Saturday. 2 o'clock Central, 3 o'clock Eastern. As to lose what the Central time, I believe it's 2 hours after, and Western time will be three. So primarily, just concentrate on the 2 o'clock Central and 3 o'clock Eastern Saturday for now. Thank you.
And International Cafe.
Cafe, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, it must be that bad.
Yeah, and then I think we got Sweet still too.
Yeah, my show is tomorrow night, I believe. Yeah, tomorrow night. Team of Voices, 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time, and it is all about spring. Let's welcome spring. Have a good time. Bring the imagery, bring the flowers, bring the smells, and just lighten up. Let's shed winter from our skins. Let's have a good time.
Oh my gosh! I think that line just inspired something really dark of shedding winter from the skins in a very dark way. I just
oh my God!
She goes
Game of Thrones on me.
I know. I might just slip into this descent of darkness by you just saying that. I'm like, oh boy, can that be something interesting? Sorry.
So can I just ask really quick, does it make, what are we supposed to bring? Anything that can be of any, it does have to be dark?
No, it can be
light,
dark, whatever. It's really about spring and how you look at spring or change or anything like that. Yeah.
All right, thanks. Understood.
What else? So we got the two announcements in. And Sky, do you have you got a show coming up?
I do. I was really busy this week. I got Saturday night, 8 p.m. over at Poetic Slice. I am featuring the film Dragonheart. So you could write about the characters, any of the quotes, any of the scenes, any of the themes. Sorry, rhymes. I could just write me a poem about dragons. I'm pretty laid back over there, so I appreciate letting me plug that, and I'll be there, and and I picked out a closing song, I hope you don't mind too, so it's my favorite song of all time, and again, I know we're not closing right now, but I just wanted to give you a heads up, and it is from the Romanticism Age as well. It is my favorite song, I mean my favorite song in the entire world. Out of every song ever created, this is my favorite. So, are you curious to what it is?
Yes.
No, well, I am curious.
Well, we're all going to have to wait now. It's a cliffhanger.
Oh, are you torturing us then? That's my prayer, this guy. God, you build up the suspense there. You keep us hanging.
That was a really good build up. And then I'm like, oh, we're going to have to wait till after the last one.
Oh, God.
Andrea's not laughing.
I'm trying to finish up something, but I think, first of all, before we go anywhere, I want to say thank you already to Sky for helping me to prepare this show, I think it was 3 or so weeks ago, and because she's the brains behind the organization of presenting this and the style that the contest, not the contest, but the show was presented in, the portraits, I provided the information, and she graphically and creatively put the, I don't want to call it a poster, with regard to the show. So I want to thank you for that, because I am entirely stunned when it comes to that kind of computer stuff. I'm good at writing things and researching and that sort of thing, but I, putting it together to make an announcement, like she does such a good job. And I'd like to thank Stephen for coming and sharing a piece, and Deb, and our producer, and Sweet Pea, thank you for calling in and sharing, and it's great to hear from you. And Frank, and Gerald, and I'm forgetting somebody.
No.
And Phil the poet, we haven't yet heard his yet, and I think that, I'm just looking to, oh, what about Mosh Pit Politics?
Oh, yes, we have to read him. I don't know if you have permission for him. You might want to check that
oh.
while Phil is reading.
I don't know where to find
that. You might want to check that with Deb. Probably Sweet. Sweet could probably tell you if Sweet doesn't mind checking into that really quick.
What am I checking into?
If we have permission for Mosh Pit.
See, if a poet named Mosh Pit Politics is given permission to have their piece, their work read.
Okay.
You're on a mission,
okay.
Sweet. We love you.
I'm on a mission.
Do you want me to press play for Phil?
Yes, please.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called Pre-Raphaelite Beauty. You pose like a Pre-Raphaelite with your long auburn hair shining in the sun and your paler than white skin. An artist's mistress, a poet's image of beauty, holding the world of your admirers in the palm of your delicate hands. You glide through life like a bohemian dream of a world full of myths and legends, immortalized in painted finesse. You are water nymph, an Eve before the fall, completely unaware of your seductive power over men. You portray the lady in the lake in an Arthurian mystery that makes your beauty shine as you fade into the lake. End poem.
Oh, well, first of all, this is, I think, the third time I've heard Phil's voice. And I don't know, you know, because North America has a great many accents within each Canada and from east to west, and so does the United States. But it's all very not English. British, I should say. I think there's a tremendous attraction to listening to someone with an accent. Phil's got a wonderful accent. And I'm not sure if I heard a bit of a Scottish brogue in there, too, along with English. I'm not sure. But he has a tremendous accent. And I love his writing, always have. And I thought this piece was beautiful. And I love the last verse. You portray the lady in the lake in an Arthurian mystery that makes your beauty shine as you fade into the lake. Phil, this is beautiful. Your voice is beautiful. I love your interpretation of the Lady of Shalott. I think that an artist's mistress, a poet's image of beauty, holding the world of your admirers in the palm of your delicate hands. Beautiful piece, really beautiful piece. And what did you think? What did you think, Frank?
Well, first of all, if I can say, England does have a variety of accents as well. But his voice was I enjoyed the cadence in his voice. And this is here, this was just, I've heard, actually this is the third time I've heard Phil. Actually it was on another show, but this is the third time I've heard of him. I mean, actually not heard of him, I've heard of his recitation. And I thought this poem was very much, I thought it was an illustration of purity and beauty. It had a great personification of the prompt itself. Although I don't see the prompt itself, he did an effective job, a very elegant way of displaying the prompt. And it just was, I have to agree, there was a sense to feel. And this is what I like about it. This is the third time I've heard him recite poems, in particular his poetry, that he has a natural sense of serenity in his pieces here. He does remind me of other poets on AP who can recite in such a calm, soothing manner. And I thought this piece was an excellent rendition there of the prompt itself, although I don't see the picture. I'll have to see it afterwards. I don't think I need the picture in the end because these words here are so descriptive in meaning and depth that they don't require really the prompt. So I thought he did an excellent job there.
Oh, yes. And Sky, what did you think?
I thought it was so beautiful that, you know, he wrote to the Lady of Shalott, and then there's a little mix out, and he mixed in a little other prompts, too. And I just want to say, you know, Phil, congratulations on the two golds and the two honorable mentions, because, wow, that is just so well worth it. I love the way you write here. You are the water nymph and Eve before the fall, completely unaware of your seductive power over men. It just reminds me of those sirens calling in to the offshore and crashing in those boats. And I just think the his language, again, his bohemian dream, and the way that he was able to lace the two pieces of art together, almost as he says, in a palm of delicate hands, but with language, and then again, just kind of fade into the lake, like that mysteriousness of being swallowed by the lake in that darkness, and it kind of leaves you lingering in that space where you want to know what's next, but you still feel completely satisfied through the literature. So I think it was always a pleasure to read Phil, and I'm so thrilled I get to hear him now, because I've been reading him for quite a while, and I'm so thrilled to be able to hear his work in his own voice. So that's really exciting for me. Really, really well done. And just to give you a heads up, Lady A, we will be going off the air in 3 minutes.
Okay.
And we just have I'm
going to say goodnight, and I did not find Mosh Pit.
Yeah, I don't think there's permissions for that, so...
We won't be able to do yours, but I'm sorry. We'll have to get your permission to give us permission to put your pieces on the radio. So if you could just send that permission to Deborah, and I don't have the email right off the top. So get in touch with Deb and get that taken care of so we can read you. So I'm going to just right now close it out with a very, very short brevity. I'm just going to put it in the room. And it is of the Klimt's painting of Adele. So it's in the room right now. And here it goes. Egypt's gold built her gown, a pyramid of excellence, exquisite jewel of the Nile, once a mistress, now divided. Husband's devotion for his Adele, desired portraits too. She, the only one to twice sit for the artist. Perhaps his love for his subject compelled he brush Adele. And he's very quick.
And now is that yours?
Oh, there you have it. Our night
is that
of
your
mysteries.
Poem?
Yes, it is.
Oh, are you going to put it on a link so we could
Well, I didn't
comment.
Put it in the thing. I will do that. Yeah.
All right. I expect
it's in the room, though. Did you not see it?
So bossy boots.
It's
yeah,
on.
I see it.
It's on the
I just want the link when you're done, if you would. This is
no,
beautiful.
I will.
I'm going to totally steal the floor from you for a minute because I want you to get a comment here from me and Frank, if that's okay. I'm not letting him go that easy. beautiful. I really, one of the things I really am pretty impressed about tonight and that I love about tonight is that everybody wrote about a different picture, and we were able to kind of, you know, and you're kind of wrapping things up with the last one, and I think it was brilliant the way that worked out. And again, this here, once a mistress, now divided, face and hands cut, separated, and illusion lover driven. Beautiful. And then again, kind of going into the story, and it, you know, with the husband's devotion for his Dell, desired portraits too. I really, you know, I don't know if this is just a brevity or you want to finish it as a whole story, but I'm definitely hooked and I would definitely want more. So, but it is also beautiful as is. And I love your work, truly.
Now, thank you.
Frank, if you want to thank you.
Yeah, do we have time?
Couple,
we have time.
All
right. No, of course. I will comment. By all means, that's a comment. This piece here was exquisite here. I mean, the lines, I mean, you don't, it doesn't have that many lines, but it doesn't require them, really. You used to evoke imagery here that just, it can make anyone who reads this just really deep down romantic. There is a devotion here, that's a romanticism here that's so natural. I thought you displayed this in a very, very lovely, lovely manner, I would say.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Appreciate it. And thank you for coming to the show.
Oh, you know,
I want to say thank you,
try.
Too. You can't steal all the thank yous.
Yeah.
I do want to say thank you.
I got myself,
Lady A, for...
I got myself out of my... go ahead.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear either one of you, but Sky was saying something. What was it, Sky?
Frank can go first. You got yourself out what?
No. I just wanted to say thank you. I got myself up for my siesta to come, but I'm always inspired. So if I came late, I do apologize, Guy and Lady A.
No.
I should have gotten there before.
We were having a blast.
Really,
we're good. Lady A can just, Lady A and I can just talk for an hour.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
I do want to say thank you to Andrea for inviting me to be part of this beautiful production and letting me to throw some things in there, like the music and the poetry and do the aesthetics, as she would say. So I do appreciate it.
Well, you know, I love you, and I appreciate everything that you do. You have a talent that I, you know, it's nice to be able to compliment each other on the good things that we have and what we don't have of each other, and so we're good that way, that we can enhance the other person in the shortcomings that they have. I don't know if that made any sense at all, but
yeah. Maybe makes me loosen up a little bit. Get Lady A's in line. So are you curious as to what my favorite song is?
Yes, I'm curious. That's why we're
all
working
right
here.
Okay. It's Swan Lake by Tchaikovsky. So I really, it is my favorite piece of music.
That.
And it is part of the public domain, so we don't have to say too much about it. But I absolutely love it. It is my favorite song, and it is part of the Romanticism era. So I thought that the two songs were pretty appropriate to the artwork tonight. So because most of the artwork was done in the Romanticism era. So I thought it was befitting. But
wow.
And as soon as you're ready to close out, I will press play for you, darling.
Yeah, go ahead. Except I don't know what happened to the announcement of our show tonight. I went to click on some stuff and it's gone.
Oh, I'm reshaping it for next time so that we can use the same build up. If you need anything else from it, let me know. If you need any links.
Okay. No, okay, that's good.
When
that's
is
all
your
good
next show?
I'm already
when?
Looking ahead. I'm already
Guys,
so you know what that means. You know what that means, Lady A, right? So I give her, so that means I need the whole work up by this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So you got some work to catch out for you. And to answer your question, Lady A is on twice a month, and I hang out with her once a month, so it won't be till next month.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like
I hang out.
To connect again.
Yeah. We do it once a month, and next show, I can tell you specifically when the next show is, because I have it in my calendar already. It is April 21st.
Yeah.
All right.
So April 21st. And I don't know what we're doing. I'm pretty excited to find out, but I make Lady A do all the grueling research, and then she just sends me a bunch of information, and I set it up. So it's our game. So
you two did
I'll
a great
be expecting
job.
That this weekend, Andrea.
Thanks. Yes. Yes, I will.
Right,
I'll give you a call in a few minutes and see what our topic's going to be.
I can't do it tonight because I'm going to head over somewhere else really quick and say my hellos. So I'm available tomorrow night, if you are.
After
Thursday, 9?
Yeah. We can do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll call you after 9. I could tell you about my wonderful couple of weeks that I've been having.
And thanks again
All right.
for joining us. It's a pleasure always. Thank you again, Sky, for everything. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll be waiting to have you read that to me sometime soon, Frank.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do a special feature.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and press play.
All right. Good night, everybody. And
all
thank
right.
you so very much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
take
you.
Care, everyone.
And this is
always a pleasure.
Best song in the world we're about to listen to right now. Literally,
all right,
almost having tears.
Before
all
you
right.
play it, though, I
all
just
right,
want to,
Kai.
Because I think I should tell Frank, wait just a second. I have I saw Swan Lake. I saw the Bolshoi Ballet do Swan Lake at the Forum in Montreal when I was probably about 9 or 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
So this will be a real treat for me.
That's what I want to say. I want to see it. I want to see it. All right.
One of these
days. Press play.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, my dear. Thank you.
so gorgeous.
Beautiful. That is.
All right, Kai. It's been
I'm
wonderful.
All right, my friend.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm going to put the link in the room there if you guys want the link for that my poem, and I just edited it just a little bit. So.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'll grab that. Thank you.
I'll see if I can. All right, Lady A.
Thank you so much.
I'll look at it, huh?
I have
all right,
some ideas for,
take care.
For future shows, so stay tuned. Love you guys.
Night.
Take care, my friend. Good night.
Buenas noches.
I'll see you over this guy. Yeah,
yes, thank you.
Bonne nuit.
Oui. Night.
Love and respect, everyone.